Let's spread a song so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme Song, yeah!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today are two extraordinary returning guests. I love having them on the podcast. It's Stephen Rubes and Mariette Williams, everyone.
Hello, woo! Hello.
Hello.
I did a brief glance at my outline, and Mary, I spelled your last name so wrong. so that's I saw Mary, that's not right.
I mean, you said it right, so I mean, it's fine. It's fine. The most, you know, I'm married into the most common last name in the entire fucking world, but it's fine.
Oh.
It's a built-in joke, and I get to use it until I'm dead, so.
I love it.
But we're here today to talk about Legally Blonde, the musical, the 2007 MTV pro shot of it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's where we're going.
Oh, my gosh. I love this show, so I'm going to say that right at the top here. I also was obsessed with the reality series, The Search for Elle Woods.
Yeah.
So good.
So the book is by Heather Hotch? Ooh, speaking of not knowing how to pronounce
it. I think it was Hawk.
Hawk? Okay. Music and lyrics by Nell Benjamin and Lawrence O'Keefe, and it was directed by Jerry Mitchell, but I think the MTV portion of it was directed by Beth McCarthy Miller. And according to IMDb, tells the story of Delta Nu's sorority sister Elle Woods and her amazing trip in pursuit of sexy man Warner Huntington III. Along the way, she meets friends Emmett Paulette, and all her Delta Nu's see her through. Okay. So we're doing like a weird crossover thing.
We are.
Where basically, majority of the episodes are going to be the same, but like we all are going to have our own.
That's fair. Yeah. We're a true crossover. We'll sometimes you'll have the reins, sometimes you'll have the reins.
And then we'll see what makes the final cut.
Yeah, whatever. It's fine.
So, little story as to why I picked this one for this crossover event. Randomly one day I was listening to it and I was like, these lyrics, some of the songs are so cringy that I needed to hear Mary's opinion on them and Steven's. And Steven was like, well, I'm going to be in a production of it. I was like, perfect. You know the show backwards, forward,
I
left,
sure
right,
do.
Sideways.
Oh, my God. I appreciate that I was the reason why you, in part, that I was the reason why you chose something. That's hilarious to me, John.
Well,
I love
like,
that.
Mary's going to have a strong opinion about.
There's one thing that can be counted on.
It's Mary has a strong opinion. Yeah, sure.
I mean, some of the lyrics are throughout the show are fine until we get to Take It Like a Man, where I was like, are we sure?
What's wrong with that lyric, John?
So, okay.
No, tell me. I just want to know. What's wrong with that lyric, John?
Oh, and then Marilyn showed up. Hello. Ooh.
Sometimes you just have to take it, and you really like it.
Hi, Marilyn. How you doing?
Marilyn does take it. Yeah, she does take it like a man on the regular, so, you know.
From all the Kennedy brothers.
Even the dead ones? Or just...
Yeah.
Just the ones above ground? No,
and
you're...
Arthur Miller.
And then she gets stuffed by Arthur Miller. Yeah, beautiful.
I'm not going to tell you how that salesman died.
Oh my God, Steven, we found someone whose laugh matches mine.
My God.
That
right.
We get to
That's
be
amazing.
The... We're the whistle tone in Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, and you're actually going to hear it because we're recording on a different platform. Yay!
Hilarious.
Usually on Zoom, it cuts out.
So cuts I'm out. Like, oh, yeah.
Okay, usually well. It does.
Yeah, so, but you're going to hear it now.
That's oh, so wow.
Maybe
funny.
Maybe I should switch to this. So, yeah, take it like a man. I'm like, okay, I think even in 2007, saying that phrase is not right at all.
No, it's not, yeah. Even a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, the context of the song kind of makes sense,
mm-hmm.
but still.
He's leaning on the microphone just absolutely like, what? I just gotta know. It's so funny to me. It's oh, my God.
I mean, I do like this show. Stephen, like you, I do like yeah. the show. I didn't see the Broadway version. I did work on a production at a theater camp with kids, and that was a wild time.
Oh, dang. Oh,
yeah, it was actually at Stage Door Manor, and that, oh, I hated what had to happen at the end, because I wanted a dress like she wears in this, and my supervisor was like, no, we have the skirt suit thing, and I was like, go fuck yourselves.
Oh, no.
And of course, they're kids, so they don't understand to the timing. Because, like, even watching this, I'm like, Orfe is milking that one line.
Oh,
just
yeah.
To give her
a moment.
Orfe Bundy a little yeah. extra, like, moment of breath.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mary, what did you think of the show?
I love that this is, we're starting high. This is just great for me. Well, so if we're looking at this specific song, do you want to know something very interesting? Is that I completely forgot the lyrics, like, take it like a man. Like, I completely, like, blacked that part of it out. And I listened to the context of what she was trying to do for Emmett. And I think that, cringiness aside, because of that phrase in and of itself, I think that the scene itself has so much emotional merit, because she is teaching this, you know, it's the flip side of when he taught her a chip on her shoulder, right? So he gives her yes. this moment of, like, you need to show up for yourself because nobody else is going to do it for you. And now we're in this thing where he's not being taken seriously by, you know, this man that he obviously idolizes, kind of. And so she's like, let me help you. It is payment in kind, right? And so she's basically telling him the value of looking good up front does mean something. And so it was just so, like, it made me think of my parents immediately, because, like, I was raised in the era of dress for the job you want and not the job that you have, right? Because that first impression, that first 30 seconds that somebody sees you, they notice something about you immediately. Like, the first thing I notice about somebody is their smile when we first meet. If you don't smile at me, we've probably got a problem, especially if you're going into a job interview, right? Like, you want to put on yeah. this persona. So honestly, I actually really loved the moment, because it was a great, I mean, obviously it's Emmett, like, putting out into the world that he actually really does like her, and is like, well, I feel like I'm under a spell every time I'm with her, because it's like, I can't say no to her and I can't be mad at her. And like, he's literally watching her do something nice for him. Which also, this might be reaching, kind of mirrors the moment when she and Paulette go get the dog, and then Elle is like, oh my God, is this what law is? Is just helping people? Like, is this the thing? And so then you get to see this moment where she and Emmett really connect over this thing that she's passionate about, and she knows so much about it that he is just like, oh, I mean, okay, I kind of like that. I don't like that. Guys who wear this get beat up on my street. Okay, that was a little cringy. That
yeah.
was.
Yeah, there are certain lines in the show that are absolutely dated.
Yeah, they're disgusting.
Like, they didn't age well, or it's still, no. But you know, if I think we're at the point where this has to be like a time capsule, this is the point of time at which this took place, and yeah. we take it for what it is.
Take it for what it is.
Also, I wasn't sure as well now watch, because I was listening just to the album. And then when I watched it for this recording, I was just like, Well, so I know Legally Blonde, the original movie, is the whole point of it is to like subvert the stereotype of what it is to be blonde,
mm-hmm.
or kind of like also subverting the rom-com.
Yeah,
yeah, 100. Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if they were trying to subvert the phrase "take it like a man" because it's literally like,
yeah, you're
taking clothes yeah. mm-hmm. and just say thank you,
like and just say thank you.
I mean, that's basically the song. Really.
Oh, absolutely, that's take funny. It and say thank you. Yeah,
yeah.
But like, it was just such a I loved the authenticity of that moment between the two of them because like for so long I think Elle like tries to embody this like she tries to take Malibu with her, right? She's got like the flashy Harvard shirts.
Yeah.
Her entire dorm room is covered in pink. I mean, it's just like she's still trying to retain elements of herself, but she also understands the value of if I look like everyone else, I'll be taken seriously until, you know, such time that she shows up in the iconic pink suit into the courtroom and she's like, basically, fuck you all. Like, I know what I'm doing, but she had to get there, right? She can't just, like, walk in with that yes. confidence. She had to build on it, and I think that that's why that song actually kind of speaks to me on a different level that I didn't think it was going to. Like, it's just, it's pretty and great, and sometimes you do kind of have to dress for the job you want to get people to notice you and to get people to take you seriously.
That's fair. Well, and what is the line in the Emmett brings up, weren't you ever taught not to judge a book by its cover? And Elle claps back, yeah, well, tattered books stay on the shelf.
Tattered books stay on the shelf. And he's like, oh, thanks. And it's like, but it's true, isn't it? Yeah. Like, it's harsh, but it's true.
I have to say, this show is very smart.
Like, oh my yeah. God, 1,000%.
Lawrence O'Keefe is an amazing adapter of film to stage.
I was thinking about this. I was like, I think this is, and I hate to say it, I think this is superior than like Mean Girls or...
Oh, it is. It fully is. That's not a question. That's a confirmation, really.
They did with the show, with what they... added, changed, whatnot. I like the change towards the end when Warner is the one who is a dick to Elle about him seeing Callahan kiss her. Mm-hmm. And it's not Vivian because earlier in Act One, granted, Elle was a little butthurt about it, but she's like, feminism, stay true to women, mm-hmm. help women out. So. Mm-hmm. The payoff works, and it's so, and it's, and it doesn't, like, really slap you in the face like other things do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's that undertone that sort of comes up and nips you now and then. You're like, oh, yeah, there's a nice little moral to this fun pink.
It's subtext by Calvin Klein.
Subtext by Calvin Klein.
It's like, remember this from Act One, everyone?
Yes. Yeah.
Hello? Do you Hello? Remember that we did this thing? Let's remind you again. Because sometimes the pink can get a little flashy and you kind of forget where you are. So I'm sorry, I completely hallucinated. What did you say? There are just many beautiful lines in this show. It's so good.
What's interesting, though, and I'm interested to hear, Stephen, like, when you get to this and your production of it, like, what changes happens? Because there's that... early in the show, there's that line where Elle is like, Richard Simmons is my neighbor. And I'm like, oh, yeah, whoa.
I'm
dated.
I might even have access to a script right here. So I might even be able to figure that out for us. But I'm very, very interested in what tiny little changes like Richard Simmons. That's probably an outdated thing now. Mm-hmm. So that's not a thing. So, yeah, I wonder who it's going to be.
I also
unless we do treat this like a time capsule thing where maybe Richard Simmons is still funny. I don't know.
Is he still alive?
It is for me.
Is he still missing?
Actually, good question.
Was he actually missing?
There was a whole podcast about like searching for Richard Simmons. I remember I didn't really listen to it. But like he just like dropped off the face of the earth.
Oh, shit.
So it's weird. Not like he got kidnapped or something, but it's like,
I don't know.
Where is he? Is he okay?
Where Where'd you go?
Does he live?
Richard? Hello?
Richard?
Dick?
The one thing I really hope your production changes is all the slut shaming that happens in this stupid show.
Oh, man. Like, well, the amount of times, like...
Speaking about cringe.
Skank, slut. I don't know. That's such a cute moment with the girls, though, because that's what descends them into madness. Yet I don't want to, like, make women feel like they can't be authentically them and, like, not, you know, go out and be a hoe, which is fine. But...
Well, if your director's listening, which, by this point, you're already in the show, so who cares?
So who cares?
Fair.
But if future directors of the show are listening, would it be the same if they're like, you bitch, or something like, or is that like on the same line? Is that a little better, maybe?
Yeah, you know, at this...
Mary, as the resident woman of the this
I know,
episode.
In this day and age, bitch might be the term of endearment.
I mean, I think truly, like Steven said, this, you know, this is a time capsule piece because in, you know, I mean, my God, in the early 2000s, that was something that was very prevalent, but also people used it as a term of endearment. And now that we've shifted this lens and we've widened it to really accept like people who do sex work and like all these things as their means of like doing their jobs. And like, you know, we're trying very hard not to slut shame people. There are always still going to be those people, unfortunately, on the outskirts of society that will still think that a woman using her body for whatever is slutty and body counts are a thing and, you know, whatever. But like, as the resident woman of this current group, I mean, I feel like I would almost like it to be bitch more than I would slut, because like, the first thing I would want is I want to clap back and be like, we support sluts in this house, and obviously we can't do that in the middle of a musical. But like, I would prefer bitch, because bitch means that I'm standing for something that I believe in, and I know what I won't settle for, and I know myself, and I know what I won't compromise. Like, and that could include using my body for whatever purpose I want to, for profit or for pleasure. I can do whatever I want with it. And to me, bitch has that connotation. So I would actually prefer that.
I think if you were... As a dude, looking inward to this conversation, I feel like if you were to replace almost all of the slut shaming with bitch or something along those lines, then when Warner slut shames her, it's like
it means more something.
It would be bigger. But can confirm right now, looking at the script, it is unchanged, and I did not see any alternatives at the beginning.
I know.
Well, it's literally written into the song, or what would be the song. I think he should be shot, and let me tell you what, I don't think he's that hot. I do. Well, you're a slut.
Oh, well, that's a rhyme. Damn it.
That's yeah. A rhyme. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you could still keep the slut shaming, you know, in the song if it doesn't hurt the music. But everywhere else, when people like say the dialogue,
but Margot comes back. Look who's talking. Three words: Spring Break, Cabo. Like it's a whole mess.
Thing.
Like they're all sluts, and that's I think the joke.
Fair enough.
What if you censored it? If it's fair. You slow in, you know, you somebody covers her mouth, so
she finished
the word slut.
That's funny. Actually, that would be funny. I'll bring that up.
I want a commission on that one.
Okay, yes. John gets 10% of your residuals. Thank you.
Listen, I'm still waiting for the Dianasance commissions.
Oh,
I
know, we right? keep saying it, and I'm just trying to make you money, John. I'm trying.
You know what? I was waiting to try and bring it up naturally, and I did.
And there we go.
Oh.
Yeah, it's definitely that's definitely going on a mug. For sure.
Dianasance. Yes.
Yeah. But like, I think because I'm super close to this too, because I have directed and choreographed this show, and then I inserted myself into that production. So
fun.
I'm like, I know the show inside and out, and I'm like, I'd love this show for everything. It was my first major musical I got to direct, and it was just amazing. So like,
So then what did you do with these cringy moments that we talked about.
Well, this was 2013. There was no PC culture.
We were just starting out.
So I was, you know, I was young and 23 and like, okay, yeah, like, fine. That's what's in the script. We're going to do it. And I thought it was funny. Like, now I look at it, watching it today, I went, oh, that did not age. And I went, yeah, I know that existed, but yeah, we should probably take a look at that nowadays again. see what can be done differently.
Have y'all seen clips from the recent West End revival of it? Like, I know I've seen, they've done Oh My God, You Guys on some things. There was like, there's a thing that they do, like the West End, like in the park or something like that, where they perform.
That's fun.
The shows perform for a larger audience. But you get to do just like one number and that's it.
Sure.
And what I liked about it is that the store clerk is played by a male presenting person. So when they yell, "Courtney, take your break," you hear, "Courtney, take your break." It's like a really booming voice.
Love it. That's so good. It's a gift from me to Elle.
Oh.
So good. Yeah. And that would be beautiful.
And like this show, and I hate this phrase, but it is a product of its time because
fully.
You have a lot of white people.
Mm-hmm. And like there's, I'm pretty sure, maybe two people of color in the production that we watched of this.
I think there had to be three because you need Sandeep Agrawal Padamadan.
Oh yes, correct.
who doubles as the
pool
boy.
You need the other gay, his boyfriend. Pilar. Was a woman of color in this 2007 MTV.
So then if you watch the West End revival, Elle is played by a black woman.
Right.
Let's go.
They gave her, I think she had braids that were blonde.
And it was hot. It was so good.
Oh my God, that makes my heart unbelievably happy.
I was looking it up that so we've all seen the original movie. Do we need to talk about it from 2001?
No. I mean, it's a classic.
I mean, we can.
Did you know, though, that it's based off of a book?
Yeah. Amanda Brown wrote a book based off of letters that she wrote back home from her time at, I forget the school now, Stanford? Yeah. And recanting that she just did not feel welcome or was not placed right. And then so there was this like litany of things that she eventually found again and went, oh, I think this is something I can write a book on.
What I don't understand is the timeline of things, because the book came out in 2001 and so did the movie. So I'm like,
yeah, it must have had to like option in January, and by December they had something.
Had the movie.
Yeah.
Bam, movie was done.
Well, I think you know when you have a product and like what's going to sell, you like green light it immediately. And when you have someone like Reese Witherspoon in your back pocket who iconic in this
she's
role.
The all-American girl, like, oh my God.
Well, so I mean, I think you also forgot what happened in 2001. So
we needed a little pick me up.
Well, no, this is before that happened.
Oh, that's right.
This came out in July.
There's no major iconic event that happened in 2001, is there?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about either. You take that sip of water.
Yes,
sorry.
That's it.
I guess I'm sassy tonight, everyone.
I mean, that is okay. I was 5 minutes late, so you're allowed to be sassy at me.
Oh my God,
you're alone.
But Mary, so we were talking. Do you have any ties to the show at all? Like, have you worked on it, seen it?
I really wish that I could say that I have, but I mean, Steven's about the closest tie that I have to the show because he and I have discussed in detail a lot of the things that he was able to do with this show. Unfortunately, I've never seen it on stage, and that is something that I really would like to see if I can ever find I don't know if it's still touring, or I don't know if I could find it somewhere, but I would love to see it, or if there was an opportunity to be part of it, I would be Paulette in a New York Minute, because her song, Ireland, oh, I cried like a child. I'm like, because I've been to Ireland, and so I know what she's talking about. Oh, my God.
Oh. You see, this is the song I skip.
You're kidding me, really? Is it really? Oh, sad.
The problem is, it has nothing to do with the musical. It has nothing to do with it. It's just Paulette's moment. Yeah. And when you have someone like Orfeu, like, you're going to use that moment to all of its benefit.
Right. But then I was like, why did we add this? Like, this is something that they completely made up for the show. It's not?
Well, no. I'm saying mm-mm as in no, it was not in the...
It was not in the film.
No. But it's not in there, and we, you know...
I'm blanking on if in the film she has this obsession with the Irish last name.
She has the obsession with the UPS guy.
And the 4th of July.
But it wasn't about an Irish last name.
Mm-mm. It wasn't about an Irish
last name. Yeah, I was like, I don't remember that part at all. So, yeah. So it's a random insert, but, you know... Choices.
That's so funny.
I mean, I will say Orfeu does sound great in the song.
Yeah.
It's the song itself.
It's the song itself. Like, but the song itself is good to a degree. I don't know. It's not my cup of tea. I'm with you, John. This was the one I skipped generally. But I also love the character Paulette.
And I love the fact that Orfeu's husband is the UPS guy.
Is the UPS guy.
We get sound effects on my podcast now.
There we go. Yeah, we can. Yeah, if you ever need to, we have some side plot action we can do. We got some applause. Yeah.
Side plot.
Yeah, we can randomly take a nice little journey if we ever want to go off topic.
But there really isn't a side plot in this, besides the Ireland thing. There really is.
That's fair.
That's not even really a
well, no, if you ever just want to go off on a tangent.
Yeah, if we go off topic, it's
be like, by the way, tacos suck or whatever. Yeah, and you know, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the dogs? By the way.
Two effing dogs. Like, that you have to do in the show. Yeah. Imagine.
I did find it fascinating that, like, the way that they trained Bruiser is they have a little carpet pad on the stage, and he stops, and then, like, I appreciate that they added the physical command into the choreography to keep the dog from barking, and then she'd lift her hands, and Bruiser would bark, and then she would, like, it was very smart. I was like, oh, yeah. Look at you.
It's interesting, because, like, when we did it, obviously we didn't have access to dogs. So they just used a little stuffed animal.
Oh no.
But I think that's like the go-to for a lot of like community and regional theaters.
Sure.
Because
I demanded real dogs.
You absolutely would
I did.
I mean, cause Paulette's dog is at least on a leash that they can.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah. But yeah, Elle just carries Bruiser around all the time. Yeah.
Except that one moment where in the beginning when he runs on the mat.
Runs up with Margot.
Correct.
Oh my gosh. She's in trouble. Where is she? At the Old Valley Mill.
Oops. Sorry. The Old Valley Mall. Oh, man.
I love them. I love the Greek chorus. The joke.
It's so funny. It's
it is the best pun that just it's forever. A Greek chorus from a Greek sorority. Yeah. Amazing.
When they did the arm choreography for Delta Nu, and I was like, Greek excuse chorus. Me. Yeah. What is happening?
You are a Delta Nu.
God, it's hey! Oh my God, it's perfect.
Yeah, but it's a great opening to this because you are immediately like descended into girl world of sorority, and the energy is at the highest ever. And it's such an amazing shift then when you are taken to Harvard and you get to see this true dichotomy of difference, and then Elle truly does look like an alien in this setting, and it's perfection. The way they like built this show in its way, it's a roller coaster of a show, but the way it's built is really, really smart.
I also, so I've seen this MTV Pro Shop before, clearly, but I don't think I really appreciated the set design of it because it felt
amazing.
Because it is based off of a movie, so you're like, okay, how do we do transitions on stage but still make it clean?
Yeah, every song literally takes you from one location to another.
There's so many and locations.
It almost has to be choreographed in, which is why I said I'm going to direct and choreograph this. Because there's no way to differentiate.
Huh.
There's no way I can like hand this off to someone and we're going to be on the same page. And it was just easier to do two in one in that, because what you want takes you to four different locations in one song. And right. like it just talking about like the jump rope number, you're taken from the what's a DVD recording into the Callahan's office, into the women's correctional facility. And then you like it just anything. And it's just these tiny little things that create such pandemonium that if you're not prepped for it, it's impossible.
That song, Whipped Into Shape, is just so impressive. They're jump roping and singing at the same time. And, like, yes, there's probably a group of people backstage who are, like, the non-dancers who are singing.
So oh, yeah,
they have more voices. But, like, come on. That's impressive. And the fact that they do it 8 times a week, mm-hmm. or they did it 8 times a week, and they were so in sync with everything. Impressive. Do you... So, when you... To this day, Stephen, do you still jump rope and sing as part of, like, to keep up your stamina?
I mean, I look back at that number and go, I could probably still do that number because it is drilled into my brain. Like, it is in my muscle memory. Like, yeah. But it reminds me of in that The Search for Elle Woods, they made the girls, like, bike really hard, fast, in, like, a cardio class for like a half hour, and then they had to sing so much better.
Well, that makes sense because Elle barely leaves the stage.
Mm-hmm. She gets like a minute. Exactly.
It brings back a lot of
all roads point back to Diana the musical.
I mean, honestly, if we're being realistic, every musical points back to, we have referenced Diana, I feel like, in
so much
half of our show that it has nothing to do with it, but we say the fuck you dress all the time. Like, literally, Diana comes back, but it's, and, you know, the jump rope number, sorry to side plot, gives me Spring Awakening vibes. It just gives me totally fucked. And Steven.
Yeah.
Because... Oh,
she's yelling at me because I made her dance really hard in that one.
Yes. So, John, real fast, I'm going to tell you a story, okay? Because this is my first interaction with Steven. And so I was in Spring Awakening. Steven was the dance captain. And we were, you know, learning how to do all of these songs. And we were doing an 8-hour rehearsal on a Saturday morning. And he is teaching us totally fucked. And we're going through it. And we get done. And I am passed out on the floor. Just like I cannot do anymore. And he walked over and he was like, "How's your break?" He said, "It's fine." He went, "Cool, we're gonna do it again." I was like, "What in the fuck?" My brain was like, "This guy does not like me. Like, clearly, I'm a thick girl that can't do this job." So, like, he's just like, "Get up." And so we did it again. But it wasn't until, like, the next day or like 2 days after that we used "Totally Fucked" as like a warm up. And we were, like, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks from putting on this show. And we are, like, doing this dance rehearsal. And we get done and we're trying to sing "Totally Fucked." And then Steven just stood there. He was like, "That's really cool." But that was about, I don't know, 65% angst. And if I'm going to put this on a fucking stage and people know that I'm the one that choreographed it, I need at least 85% before we can continue. And he looks at the director, who just looked at us and went, "Well, and sat back down. And then the music started and we did it again. But I am right on the ground going,
so before
guys,
I sound like a complete asshole.
No, shush, you're not an asshole. But I'm laying on the ground and I'm just like, I can't,
but
I can't
do
it.
Could you sing that number without being winded at the end?
Yes, that was what exactly I was getting to. That was, you gotta let me do the whole thing because then you sound like an asshole and then you had to come save yourself, okay?
I did.
Well, no, it makes sense because before we started recording, Stephen and I were talking about Whipped Into Shape and he was like, he said that this is the first number that you have to start with.
Yeah.
Because you need to know that you can run around this stupid stage for 2.5 hours, however long. I mean, according to the YouTube, it's 2 hours, but I feel like some things were cut here and there because of the MTV.
Now and again, yeah. I mean, if you put together a tight show, I think it's right around 2:10.
Okay. And you get what, like a 15-minute break intermission to take a deep breath and go back on stage. Like,
right.
I can't speak about Spring Awakening because I have different thoughts on that. But with this one, this is high energy, high paced, high everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, there is no break. That. There really isn't. Like, it's a runaway train. Once that curtain opens, it is going to end. Whether you know, right. It's going to go on without
it's,
you.
It's the play that the show that goes wrong. The play that goes wrong. But yeah, you have to go right because you have no other option. You gotta go.
Like, but my question for you, John, like, what draws you to this show? What do you like about this show?
So there is a number that I was holding off because I did want to talk about it, and that is So Much Better. That
so
song is beautiful. Like, that's the one that puts me to tears because it is the most relatable song that I think anybody can say, because you know that feeling. We all have had that feeling where we're like, against all odds, we did the thing. And now it's time to show up to everyone else. I know I've definitely played that in those moments since the show came out, but like, it's one of those things where even we can all say, like, we've all worked on shows before that once it's up and running and everything, and we just take a back seat and look at it, we're like, we did this. Good job. Especially like your first one where you're like, I can do this now.
Yep.
So I like that. I also really like the translation that they did because they don't really hit you over the head with the references. Yes and no. I mean, Bend and Snap is its own song, rightfully so.
Someone probably looked at the film and went, because of that dance sequence in the film, went, oh, this could be a musical.
Yes.
I mean, not then, because we could go on a completely separate tangent that this is like, I'll say it, like the perfect fodder for a musical, a larger than life character set in a like weird place. And then the situation itself is absurd. So it's perfect. It's a perfect story for Sage.
And I think that's why the movie is now like a cult classic.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie is 23 years old, everyone.
Oh, don't.
Ow!
I had to. I had to because I did the math and I was like, it's over 20. Oh!
Okay, so somewhere there's a painting of the three of us that's getting older.
Nope. Ooh. I have no painting. It's just me.
Oh, fair. All right.
Grays everywhere.
Oh, why do you think I dye my hair, John?
Why do you think I buzz it short, Mary?
Love it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you
I will just gracefully go get my blonde highlights.
Fantastic.
Actually, this is a great segue. So I actually have a little history because that's sort of our bag from the top. We always do a little bit of why is a show a thing? How did a show come to be? And why is this even a premise for something? So Legally Blonde, it being a sort of stereotype of like the dumb blonde, right? When did this happen? What started this? Where did this idea come from that blondes are dumb? Well, I have some thoughts and facts for you.
Oh, hi there. Future John here. So I had to cut this out because of timing. It is unfortunate, but make sure you go check out their episode on From the Top, because Steven's facts are very fascinating, and we do go a little cuckoo bananas crazy during it. So again, check out our crossover episode From the Top that should be out now, question mark? I don't remember when they said they're releasing the episode. It should be around this time. Okay, back to the episode.
And I will say, this is a funny fact about me. My grandmother, when I was very young, came to me and she was like, you're going to have blonde hair for the rest of your life, like me, and use it. You can get away with anything you want. Use it. And I went, what? Like, I'm like 5 years old and not like understanding. But that has been in my mind, like, all my life. And I went, I feel like I get treated differently as a blonde because they're like, oh, I just, you know, like the perfect all American blonde hair, blue eyed boy. And you go, oh, I do kind of get treated differently. And sometimes I can use that to my advantage and like they won't expect much because it's whatever, but then I can surprise them.
Wow.
I mean, I feel like with this one, they're more relying on the fact that she's from Malibu rather right. than she's blonde.
Yeah, there's this weird thing in the show where it's kind of my like downturn about all of it, because you either have to pick the lane of your West Coast versus East Coast, Malibu versus, you know, this other side of the country, and that cultural thing, but they also layer in this I'm blonde situation. So I don't know.
I love the movie. Reese Witherspoon did a great job. Laura Bell Bundy in the show is amazing. I know she's wearing wigs, but I can't clock it because it looks great.
Great.
And I believe Orfe is a natural blonde. And I think she's got to be wigged in this because.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah.
I can't remember, though. I can't. But like Laura Bell Bundy, I think that's her hair.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's her hair. I could be lying, but I swear that's her hair.
I thought they would wig her just to make sure they have the curls consistent throughout.
I don't know, but I feel like I remember that being a thing. I know they do have an L wig, though. I do know that because some L's that play aren't naturally blonde, but.
Right. But so in the spirit of Mean Girls as well, do you think, though, that like this musical would work as a movie if they complete the circle?
Ooh, like do the Mean Girls track. Okay. Yes.
So it was a movie, a straight movie. Now it's a musical. They're adding a different genre to it. And now if they were to complete it and make it a movie again, but the musical, I mean, honestly, I think it would work.
I would say yeah. But you see, I would go watch this anyway. So like, I'm the wrong person to ask this. But do I think it would be good? I think is the question that you're asking. Yes, I think it would. Everything about it, I think, works. I think it could be the next generation's Legally Blonde in a way. And I think it would reach little girls everywhere and be super empowering. Yeah.
What about you, Mary? What do you
I totally agree. I mean, I think it's something that it would give them a great opportunity if we're going back to focus the lens specifically on, like, the book, let's say. It gives them a great opportunity to change the things that may not be relevant anymore and to give it some new life and to make it applicable to people in a different generation. And, you know, the universal theme of this is you can do anything you set your mind to, truly. If you take out the obstacles that are blocking you, you are the only one that is standing in your way to ultimately achieve what you want. So that is a universal theme that kind of applies to any person. I mean, truly, regardless of gender or age, that is just kind of the I guess, lesson to take from the show. And I would happily watch this as a movie because I have the working knowledge of the original film, and now having seen it translated to stage. Just touching back on the thing that you two were talking about, being able to transition between all of these locations that we have, like, we would be able to take the magic of what has happened on stage and now have the added resource of putting it back into film, where you can make those cuts and those jumps without needing to do special things. You can just make them happen.
And fill the space.
Absolutely. I would happily watch an entire campus of Harvard students literally, like, just dancing to a bunch of stuff. Like, it would be hilarious to me. Or in the courtroom doing something. Oh my god, it would be amazing.
And then they can do, like, some sort of ethereal glow on the Greek chorus.
Exactly.
You know, make it a little more cinematic.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the great thing about this show is that they are not doing what the actors did in the original movie. So, like, Laura Bell Bundy is doing a very different approach to Elle Woods than Reese Witherspoon did. Orfe is not acting like Jennifer Coolidge by any means.
Not at all. Yeah. No. Well, how do you mimic that? Like, it's not going to.
Without hot dog, real bad.
Oh, yeah. We found out that Steven has a really good Jennifer Coolidge, didn't we, Steven? No.
Well, we did. Now I'm under pressure, and I don't think I can.
There were moments, though, that Michael Rupert, who played Professor Callahan, did look like Richard Gere, but I think that's just how genetics work. I don't think they were actively casting somebody who looks exactly like Richard Gere.
Yeah, it was right. Victor Garber, not Richard Gere.
Victor Garber. Ah, damn it. Well, he looks like Richard Gere.
He does. He does look like Richard Gere, absolutely. But
he doesn't look like Victor Garber. You're right. I'm so shame on me. Bad me. He's a Broadway legend. Fuck.
I just redeemed the 5 minutes of being late.
Okay,
so,
fine.
All right.
Fine. I chastise myself live for you all.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Oh man, the song Blood in the Water. Can we just, for like a second, I really dug that song.
I think that made some parts of your body a little moist, Mary.
No, but thank you for I can't even thank you for that, because that's not my okay.
Yeah, just saying.
Oh, well, fair.
You gave, like, happy look to that song.
I don't know. It was just like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm all about a man in power. Like, let's be real. But I what? Hey, we're being our authentic selves on the show, and you can cut it out later if you want to.
No, we're keeping everything.
None of it.
The two of them just went, no, this is the raw cut. This is what would be on the cutting room floor, but y'all get to hear it because I'm a Looney Tune. But I don't know. I liked the song Blood in the Water because, like, it, while I am all about, you know, feminine empowerment and, like, the journey that Elle goes through to, like, get the respect of her peers and to, like, you know, to really kind of come out on top at the end of this show, Blood in the Water is kind of the moment where the stakes get set. They're like, this is the benchmark that you've got to meet. That's cool that you passed your LSATs and you got into Harvard. That's cool that you bought a textbook you still have not read. Like, you showed up to the first day of class looking like an alien, and you pulled out a pad of paper and a pen while the rest of your colleagues are using laptops. Like, this, like, Callahan, while he is a sleaze, still successfully sets the bar and goes, if you want to actually do this, here's what you got to do. Now, I'm not about actually, like, being vindictive and being a shark, but, like, unfortunately, in the realm of law, there are times where law gets bent to your will, right? And there's a lot of gray areas and a lot of things. You have to fight for what you want. And that's the through line through this whole show, is fighting for what you want. Mm-hmm. Sharks fight for food, and Elle fights for first Warner's approval, which then ends up being, you know, a moot point. But then she ends up fighting for herself. But Blood in the Water is like there is no going back now. And I really appreciated that song for that particular singular purpose.
Yeah, and that's that you actually bring up a really great point in that this show is essentially two shows. Like, the act one finale then sort of sets you up for what would be the next phase of the show. Because mm-hmm. the first act, she spends her whole time and drive and her stakes are getting Warner back, but then the last half of the show is all about making sure Brooke Wyndham gets off on this trial, because sure. the whole Warner track is now it's like a no longer. You yeah. pretty much forget that's why she was ever at Harvard.
Yeah.
And so there's just two very different stories being told, and it's something that I remember having to be very conscious about when directing it too, because I went, okay, like, I think we're still trying to pander to, like, maybe she's after Warner because the whole Emmett situation hasn't solidified, but we have to call back.
No, I think in So Much Better, she is the one who is like, I'm done. We're done.
Right. Well, she's realizing she needs to live her authentic self in that moment and be her own person with Emmett's. This also makes me angry, because at the end, in the end song, she claims something about with no one to hold her hand and help her along the way. And I'm like, literally everyone you came across had to pull you up.
Really? It was only Emmett, though, that pulled her up.
Well, so did Ooh. Paulette.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean,
and
so
then,
Paulette,
like, technically,
her
Greek chorus, she was about to give up and have a freak out, but the Greek chorus in her head.
I was about to be like, they're in her head, though. It's her.
Yeah, but but if they wouldn't have magically appeared, I don't know.
Manifesting them.
I don't know. It always read wrong to me in that moment that she did not give credit where credit was due to some people in her life. But
well, because I didn't get a chance to rewatch the original movie. But I feel like in there, she calls the two friends. There was two friends in the movie. There's three on the stage show. She calls them a couple of times throughout the movie, which is what they did with the Greek chorus as mm-hmm. like, but instead it's an internal monologue. And then you said something about how, like, Act One is one story and Act Two is another story, but I feel like that also happens in the movie. Where
no, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Once she gets part of Callahan's, she has a similar moment where she's just, where she teases Warner and basically is like, we're done. We did it. We're fine.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah. I'm not sure, though, because I think had she not so well successfully taken on this case and done so well with it, I think she would have been more apt when Warner pops the question to Mary. Like, if it wouldn't have gone off well, I think she would have been more apt.
Maybe,
to drop back.
But I also just feel like after chip on her shoulder, chip on my shoulder, excuse me. That's the weirdest type too. Shouldn't it be chip on your shoulder?
Yes.
Because
yes.
Well, I mean, because Emmett is
Emmett starts L finishes it. Yeah. Well, and then Emmett finishes the finish.
they're talking about how Emmett talks about how he has a chip on his shoulder, so it would be chip on my shoulder.
There we go.
It's just a weird, but it's weird to say. Anyway.
I remember my Emmett, who was also my theater roommate at that time, having the same problem. He's like, when do I say my, when is yours?
But it feels like once she gets through that song and then we go into So Much Better, it's like she forgets about Warner. And she's now focused really on herself for probably the first time ever in her life.
It's true. But she's also having to work with Warner and Vivian on this legal team. And so, like, there's this constant reminder. And then he uses their history together all the time to try and, like, push forward the agenda at hand.
God. I also... When the audience applauded, gave him entrance applause, I was like, why? We all know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Whether you admit it or not, you know what's going to happen.
Quit. Don't applaud him. Stop that.
But is there anything else y'all want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
I want a hot dog.
I want a hot dog real bad.
Told you, didn't I?
It is good.
It's pretty good.
No, I think like the show is pretty.
Carol Channing.
There we go.
How you going, everyone? It's Carol Channing.
That's a good one. Love it. No, the problem is this show is just sort of like in the ether. Everyone knows this show, so it's kind of like if you don't know the musical, you know the film. And so this story really has just sort of permeated the zeitgeist of the world. So I would sit here and talk about the show all day, but...
All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat then, shall we?
Sounds good.
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about them. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. Let's start with flats, because let's end on a high note.
Yeah.
I'll go first to give you all
Do it.
A few Sounds seconds. Great. So I think you can all agree with me. My first flat is for the dated lyrics, dialogue, references. This is a time capsule, but like for future productions, God, I hope they change a lot of them.
Yeah.
just cause. And to piggyback off of that, the slut shaming flat for that. I'm also sorry, Mary, I'm flatting Ireland.
You can flat it. It's okay.
Don't be mad at me, please.
We
often disagree on which songs are good or not, so it's totally fine.
It's true. It's just true. John, I could never be mad at you, honey.
Oh, Diana Sons. And then my last flat. I don't really have that many flats, really. My last flat is for the pool boy's name, Mr. RG Tacos. I was like,
ow, gross.
No. I mean,
I'm sure RG means real good as well. Like some Mr. Real Good Tacos.
That's amazing. My flats with the show.
It's a solid show, even though
that's it's, though it's my issue. I just stuff. Yeah, it's the in hindsight now, in the era we're in now, but when it came out, it was just like the perfect thing. But I would say the flaws could be in some of maybe the, here's how I'll say it. The flat for me is the sort of pedantic writing. In some of it, I love Lawrence O'Keefe to death, but some of the words and phrase or some of.
There's a moment.
I just can't talk, apparently. No, but the childish, not childish. I don't know. Take over.
I was going to say in Legally Blonde, when Emmett comes in with, wait, where are you going? I was like, where does this come from? Is that what you're talking about?
Sort of. Well, it just comes in like, I feel like they took the easy way out on a lot of getting from one point A to point B. And sometimes I always talk about, I want more meat in my script than anything. Like I want the reasons why and whatever. And musical theater doesn't always lend itself well because you're trying to get from one musical number to the other quickly. Right. And that I just think sometimes there could have been more padding. So when I say it just doesn't hit for me all the time in some of these scenes going from point A to point B.
There's a lot of songs in this thing.
Yeah, there are. And there's no time.
No time.
Mary, what are your flats?
I mean, it's unfortunately, it's kind of hard to just follow those two acts because, I mean, my biggest flat was like, it might be a cop out, but right in the very beginning, and oh my God, you guys, the whole daughter of Delta Nu, you've found a man and try not to look your age. Like,
That is, well, yeah. I think we eventually get the redeeming of that out of it with the end of the show. So you have to start somewhere and get somewhere. But the fact it is so blatant that these girls think that that's it.
Yeah. Like it, that kind of was kind of a big flat for me, only again, because of the era that we are in now, it is most definitely not, that's not how we view these relationships anymore. In 2001, that is kind of how we viewed things. In 2007, that is how some people viewed things. And I understand that, like, from the perspective of, like, Elle coming out of the sorority, like, not that that is everybody's sorority experience. I was never part of the, you know, of a Greek, you know, anything, because, like, my college didn't have that. So, like, we didn't have the any sort of thing that you could belong to like that. So, like, I don't want to cast aspersions on people who were in sororities or fraternities, because maybe you can learn some really good things being part of those groups, but it really feels like in that time period, if you were part of Delta Nu, the thing that you focused on was partying and then finding a husband. And if you found the husband, now yeah. your life can begin. And it's like, but babe, what, you're a senior in college and only now is your life beginning because you found a man? Like, that doesn't pass a Bechdel test even in a minute, because, like, all these women are, like, wrapping their whole lives around the concept of being a man and, or being a man, finding a man, and to then go into, like, the very first Before Blood in the Water, where Callahan makes the comment about lesbians, like, sir, that would be my second flat. The fact that we are kind of gay bashing a little bit, where it's like, oh, well, you're a lesbian, you'd never be able to do this because your feelings are showing. And it's like,
and that is what is funny about this, because not only they down talk it some about being an LGBT, but they also promote it very well, like Enid Hoops and our Gayer European song ultimately ends well, but it's also kind of the butt of the joke, which they is do, where it
they did have like the forethought not to call it Gayer European though. It was kind of right. like a chorus line moment with Dance 10
Looks. Exactly. Three. I always reference that, all the tits and ass. Yeah, yeah. Dance 10 Looks 3. Yeah.
The song is called They're Right There.
Yeah, yeah, They're Right There.
But everyone calls it Gay or European.
Exactly. So.
But yeah, those are my flats. Those would be the majority of them, I feel. It's just that little, the cringy bit.
Great. So, Sharps. I first sharped the set design because, like I said, it just felt beautiful. Cinematic. It was grand. And I feel like we repeated, like, two or three locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's impressive. I also sharped the choreography because, again, that's all this is. I also sharped the fact that Margot is able to speak to Bruce. that's so dumb.
Yeah,
that's
no,
so dumb. But I'm
is
so
that a
happy.
Dumb blonde moment?
Maybe,
maybe.
There we go.
I sharped so much better because
it's like perfect said, Act One finale song. It just
it's
is
everything about it. I have sharps for specific performances, but this one, it's just the whole concept of the song, the staging, the fact that they spell out Elle Woods at the end, which is beautiful. And really, when you're designing it, you have to think who's where and make sure you talk to your director choreographer to be like, who is where? Please, then, thank you. Because I need to know how to spell this fucking word. I also sharped Elle's costumes because there is a whole journey that Mary, you were talking about. And my favorite little detail is on the last dress, and it's the fact that her belt is a tie.
Because it's just smart.
It's just so smart. And then there's, like, some humorous moments that I sharped in What You Want, when she says, time for my cross, and she crosses the stage. Like, that's so funny. Mm-hmm. The pun of the Greek chorus, all the bunny puns, and the perfume names in Take It Like a Man. And there's others, too, throughout, but, like, those are the ones that really spoke out
really
to me.
Really highlight.
Sure.
And then the following performances, I'm going to sharp. Chip on my shoulder, goddammit. Whipped Into Shape, of course, and then Legally Blonde Remix. Because, again, that's another one where everyone's doing laps around that stage.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Also hell, because you have to transition into that jury room courtroom. Right at the end. Courtroom. Sorry.
Oh, there's another humorous moment where at the end, when they're in the bathroom and the stenographer's notes are part of the toilet on the toilet roll.
Like, that's right.
Perfect. Stephen, what are your sharps?
Oh my gosh. I mean, truly, it just everything from the pretty much this entire album is a solid album to me. I will even allow Ireland. And I think the characters are written better in a way than they were in the film. I think that's better. I think we got to expand on some people, give a little more call outs and shout outs. I really appreciate everything from the lighting and the little hints that we get and nods from the film, which is always a huge thing for me. I love Easter eggs, and if I don't get the Easter eggs that I need from the source, I don't enjoy it as much. So I really applaud this. And again, I bring this name up all the time because Lawrence O'Keefe is so good at this specific thing.
Any other sharps, Stephen? Or is it...
I mean, I'd sharp the whole show, but...
Great. Mary, what are your sharps?
Well, specific songs, I said it already, but I'm going to sharp Blood in the Water because I love that is the moment that the stakes get set. I actually really enjoy, I mean, it might also be a cop-out, but I'm going to sharp Bend and Snap because it's such a great dance number. It's such a cute... Because, like, it's the, you know, if you think back to the film, it's the moment where, you know, Elle has been helping, you know, all these different people, and of course, like, she's already helped Paulette, like, to get the dog back, but now she's giving Paulette something else, and she's really doing the supportive feminine thing of, like, girl, let me show you how it's done. Anybody can do this. Let's go. And then they just go into this incredible number. So, I mean, it's sharp there for sure. And then I won't sharp Ireland because while I like the song because I've traveled to the country, so like I feel a little bit more of a pull to it, I understand where it does not belong in the show. Like, I get it, so I won't do it. But, you know, I think of performances, I think the last thing I would sharp is Chip on My Shoulder because thinking back to the film with, one of those damn brothers, Luke Wilson, I think is who that is.
I think that's him.
You get a guy that looks like Luke Wilson, which is hilarious to me. But, like, I remember it a little bit in the film where Emmett is kind of, like, challenges Elle a little bit and is like, why are you doing this? Like, clearly you don't really want this, but, like, there is a ton of people that would kill to be where you are right now. I can't remember how much of that interaction happens, but I loved Chip on My Shoulder because it is the moment where, while the stakes have been set with Blood in the Water, we have Chip on My Shoulder that's like, all right, you can't just, it's not a dancing through life scenario, right? We can't all just be, you know, freaking doing this thing and being cute and gliding in on our looks and doing things. You have to want this, and you have to want it for a reason that is yours and not for anyone else. And I loved that because then not only did it set, do we have the stakes set for the career, but he went, are you going to do this or not? And I feel like Elle is the type of person that rises to a challenge. She doesn't like being challenged. She's got a competitive nature because, you know, maybe being in, you know, a Greek family does that, right? Like being part of a sorority. So, like, she went, all right, game on. And it was just a beautiful, like, we lit the fire underneath her, right? And then you could really see her want the, like, throughout the rest of the film, throughout the rest of the show, you could see what her I want statement was, and then you could watch it change. And it was so, it was very cool and tickled my brain in a very good way. So those are my sharps.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I do listen to this every once in a while, this album. I do, there are some skips that I have. But the highlights that I listen to are, oh my God, you guys, Positive, Chip on My Shoulder, So Much Better, Whipped Into Shape, Bend and Snap, and Legally Blonde Remix. I mean, Mary, you're probably going to add Ireland to your list.
I'm not even going to try to deny you. I'm just going to say yes.
I would add, I mean, my life's playlist, like, keep it positive, like, you have to. I would probably...
That's another smart song, I have to say.
It is. It just, like, all these songs are so smart.
Keep it positive while you murder him in your sleep. Positive. Those are not the lyrics, but I didn't want
to, like... As you slap her to the floor.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's like, we're being positive. Stab him in the gut.
Yeah. Clever.
Basically.
100. Yeah, overall, like, this, I just listened to this album stem to stern, so they're pretty much all part of my life. But yeah, Positive is always on repeat. So Much Better is always on repeat, because I think it reminds me that even if I don't think I can do something, sometimes it pans out and it works for the better.
And I'll add Blood in the Water. I didn't add that, but I'm gonna add that because it is a good reminder to be like, sometimes you have to be a shark. Mm-hmm. And like, Elle is a shark, but in her own way.
Yeah. The scenes that they work out where she is a shark is in, like, the social situations. When she gets into, like, that party in the Playboy Bunny, she owns it and then uses a Gloria Steinem reference against Vivian, who, with Enid, to her, because she knows how to work a room and use social power against each other. So, like, again...
The second it's classroom just, scene.
It's just smart.
The department store scene in the very beginning with a half whip stitch on, you know, China silk.
Oh, yeah. Like, she's a shark before she knows that she's a shark.
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely.
And she is. I will say, I almost want to, like, call back and just sharp out that I love the moment where it is Emmett telling her, like, you got into Harvard because you were following a guy. Like, not everyone can just get into Harvard.
Yeah, because like, I feel it's like hard? I was gonna say in the movie, I feel like they downplay the awe of it to kind of be like, because of her punchline of the what, like, it's hard, but like really it's like, you got into Harvard. Like, I would say that to myself every morning if I got into Harvard, be like, you got into Harvard? You're a dummy. How did you get into Harvard?
Yeah. And like, but
how did you get into Harvard? Exactly. You're a dummy. For those of you who can't see, which is everyone else besides Stephen and Mary, I am pointing at myself in the camera right now. You are dumb. How did you get into Harvard?
But yeah, I do love that moment just because he points it out blank for her that goes like, hey, you did this and you weren't even trying. Imagine what you could do if you applied yourself.
Right.
Absolutely.
And on that note, we're done with the episode, everyone. We did it.
Yay.
Legally blind. Yeah.
I don't know if it matters, but I didn't actually get to say what I would put on my life's playlist.
Oh, sorry. What did you? I thought you said.
I said I would
I said Ireland, yes. But what else would you add? I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, I would also add Blood in the Water. And then I would absolutely do Bend and Snap, because when I'm feeling down, I need, you know, some little fabulous pick-me-up to remind myself who the fuck I am. So I would absolutely do that, too.
Mary, do you have any fun hashtags? I didn't hear any.
Oh my God. Cause I mean, unfortunately I didn't write any down this time. But I mean, if I were to think of, any, I like, oh my God. Well, it's not really a fun hashtag, but the first one I would think of is hashtag quick change, because when she gets into that dress for her anniversary or her engagement outfit, hot damn, like 0.35 seconds just into a new costume. Actually, you know what? There was the moment when they're all running off to the mall and the girl at the top of the balcony goes, hey, wait for me. And then she comes down the pole and she's immediately just like gone from a mask to like made up immediately. It's like,
Hashtag body double. Hashtag yeah. body double. Magnets.
Hashtag my morning routine. Like,
yeah, I wish.
Oh, yes. Hashtag my morning routine.
Jesus. Like, could I just do that, please? Take 3 seconds to get ready. It would be lovely.
Just slide down a fireman's pole.
And be made up and done. Yes.
Made up. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, now on that note, we're done with the episode. Stephen and Mary, what do you have to plug or promote?
Season.
What do you have?
Ooh. What do you want to see from me tonight?
Marilyn.
I'm happy to give you whatever you want.
Put your dress down. Put it down. You can go to the Rager after. Put it down.
No. Season 2 should be is being dropped. So just listen in. And we're coming out with a new podcast series to supplement as well. So keep an eye out for that.
So you have the main feed. You have the show notes, and then you're going to have a third one?
Well, show notes is really the secondary to From the Top, and then we are launching just a tiny, small one that is more for us to have a little more fun with.
And if you want to follow it and you want to figure out all of the, like, you know, the subterfuge that Steven is peppering in throughout this thing, you should follow us on our social media, FromTheTop_podcast on Instagram, or you can email us at podcastfromthetop@gmail.com.
And if you have any fun stories from your production of Legally Blonde the Musical, I'd love to hear about it. Mm-hmm. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. Us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. I don't know what else to ask you guys.
Oh my God, you guys, we did it.
Oh my God, you guys! Ben and Sam.
And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we're going to be talking about Has-Been Hotel. Season 1, question mark? Not sure if there's gonna be more yet.
Love it.
Well, Stephen and Mary, thank you so much for coming back on.
Thank you so much for having us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, John.
It's not Star Kid.
Okay, do you want to know something funny, though? It's not the Mandela effect, but, like, when you watch something and then everybody, like, from then on, like, you see it out in your world. I am talking to a human being that I have only just met. She's a photographer in another city in Montana. She's snapped me, and I was like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I'm folding laundry. You'll never guess what was on the TV while she was folding laundry. A very Potter musical.
Of course it was.
And I'm like, excuse me, what is on your TV right now? And she confirmed, and I went, okay.
Are we now best friends, question mark?
Oh my God, did we just become best friends? Yep.
Well, thank you everyone for listening, and bye for now.
Goodbye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.